Chapter 75. And without voices, apostrophe tittered Mrs. Briggs, in a low tone. Perhaps, apostrophe said Mrs. Taunton, reddening, for she guessed the tenor of the observation, though she had not heard it clearly. Perhaps it would be as well for some people, if their voices were not quite so audible as they are to other people. Apostrophe, and, perhaps, if gentlemen who are kidnapped to pay attention to some person's daughters, had not sufficient discernment to pay attention to other person's daughters, apostrophe returned Mrs. Briggs, some persons would not be so ready to display that ill temper which, thank God, distinguishes them from other persons. Apostrophe, persons. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ejaculated Mrs. Taunton. Persons, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Briggs. Insolence. Apostrophe, apostrophe, creature. Apostrophe, apostrophe, hush. Hush. Apostrophe, interrupted Mr. Percy Noakes, who was one of the very few by whom this dialogue had been overheard. Hush. Pray, silence for the duet. Apostrophe, after a great deal of preparatory crowing and humming, the captain began the following duet from the opera of Paul and Virginia, apostrophe in that grunting tone in which a man gets down, heaven knows where, without the remotest chance of ever getting up again. This, in private circles, is frequently designated a bass voice. Apostrophe, see, sung the captain, from O.C. and rising bright flames here be of D.A. From yon grove, the varied songs apostrophe, here, the singer was interrupted by varied cries of the most dreadful description, proceeding from some grove in the immediate vicinity of the starboard paddle box. My child! Apostrophe, apostrophe, screamed Mrs. Fleetwood. My child! It is his voice, I know it! Apostrophe, Mr. Fleetwood, accompanied by several gentlemen, here rushed to the quarter from whence the noise proceeded, and an exclamation of horror burst from the company, the general impression being that the little innocent had either got his head in the water or his legs in the machinery. What is the matter? Apostrophe, apostrophe, shouted the agonized father, as he returned with the child in his arms. Oh, oh, oh! Apostrophe, screamed the small sufferer again. What is the matter, dear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the father once more, hastily stripping off the nankeen frock, for the purpose of ascertaining whether the child had one bone which was not smashed to pieces. Oh, oh, I'm so frightened. Apostrophe, what at, dear? What at? Apostrophe, said the mother, soothing the sweet infant. Oh, he's been making such dreadful faces at me, apostrophe, cried the boy, relapsing into convulsions at the bare recollection. He? Who? Apostrophe, cried everybody, crowding round him. Oh! Him! Apostrophe, replied the child, pointing at Hardy, who affected to be the most concerned of the whole group. The real state of the case at once flashed upon the minds of all present, with the exception of the Fleetwoods and the Wakefields. The facetious Hardy, in fulfillment of his promise, had watched the child to a remote part of the vessel, and, suddenly appearing before him with the most awful contortions of visage, had produced his paroxysm of terror. Of course, he now observed that it was hardly necessary for him to deny the accusation, and the unfortunate little victim was accordingly led below, after receiving sundry thumps on the head from both his parents, for having the wickedness to tell a story. This little interruption having been adjusted, the captain resumed, and Miss Emily chimed in due course. The duet was loudly applauded, and, certainly, the perfect independence of the parties deserved great commendation. Miss Emily sung her part, without the slightest reference to the captain, and the captain sang so loud, that he had not the slightest idea what was being done by his partner. After having gone through the last few 18 or 19 bars by himself, therefore, he acknowledged the plaudits of the circle with that air of self-denial which men usually assume when they think they have done something to astonish the company. Now, apostrophe, said Mr. Percy Noakes, who had just ascended from the fore cabin, where he had been busily engaged in decanting the wine. If the Mrs. Briggs will oblige us with something before dinner, I am sure we shall be very much delighted. One of those hums of admiration followed the suggestion, which one frequently hears in society, when nobody has the most distant notion what he is expressing his approval of. The three Mrs. Briggs looked modestly at their mama, and the mama looked approvingly at her daughters, and Mrs. Taunton looked scornfully at all of them. The Mrs. Briggs asked for their guitars, and several gentlemen seriously damaged the cases in their anxiety to present them. Then, there was a very interesting production of three little keys for the aforesaid cases, and a melodramatic expression of horror at finding a string broken, and a vast deal of screwing and tightening, and winding, and tuning, during which Mrs. Briggs expatiated to those near her on the immense difficulty of playing a guitar, and hinted at the wondrous proficiency of her daughters in that mystic art. Mrs. Taunton whispered to a neighbor that it was quite sickening. And the Mrs. Taunton looked as if they knew how to play, but disdained to do it. At length, the Mrs. Briggs began in real earnest. It was a new Spanish composition, for three voices and three guitars. The effect was electrical. All eyes were turned upon the captain, who was reported to have once passed through Spain with his regiment, and who must be well acquainted with the national music. He was in raptures. This was sufficient. The trio was encored. The applause was universal. And never had the Taunton suffered such a complete defeat. Bravo! Bravo! Ejaculated the captain. Bravo! Pretty, isn't it, sir? Inquired Mr. Samuel Briggs, with the air of a self-satisfied showman. By the by, these were the first words he had been heard to utter since he left Boswell Court the evening before. Delightful! Returned the captain, with a flourish, and a military cough. Delightful! Sweet instrument! Said an old gentleman with a bald head, who had been trying all the morning to look through a telescope, inside the glass of which Mr. Hardy had fixed a large black wafer. Did you ever hear a Portuguese tambourine? Inquired that jocular individual. Did you ever hear a tom-tom, sir? Sternly inquired the captain, who lost no opportunity of showing off his travels, real or pretended. A what? Asked Hardy, rather taken aback. A tom-tom. Never. Nor a gum-gum? Never. What is a gum-gum? Eagerly inquired several young ladies. When I was in the East Indies, replied the captain, here was a discovery he had been in the East Indies. When I was in the East Indies, I was once stopping a few thousand miles up the country, on a visit at the house of a very particular friend of mine, Ram Chowder Das Zafal Bolar, a devilish pleasant fellow. As we were enjoying our hookahs, one evening, in the cool veranda in front of his villa, we were rather surprised by the sudden appearance of 34 of his khitmagars, for he had rather a large establishment there, accompanied by an equal number of consumars, approaching the house with a threatening aspect, and beating a tom-tom. The ram started up who? Inquired the bald gentleman, intensely interested. The ram chowder said the old gentleman, beg your pardon, pray go on. Started up, and drew a pistol. Elves, said he, my boy, he always called me, my boy, elves, said he, do you hear that tom-tom? I do, said one. His countenance, which before was pale, assumed a most frightful appearance. His whole visage was distorted, and his frame shaken by violent emotions. Do you see that gum-gum? Said he. No, said I, staring about me. You don't? Said he. No, I'll be damned if I do, said I, And what's more, I don't know what a gum-gum is, said one. I really thought the ram would have dropped. He drew me aside, and with an expression of agony I shall never forget, said in a low whisper apostrophe, dinner's on the table, ladies, apostrophe interrupted the steward's wife. Will you allow me? Apostrophe apostrophe said the captain, immediately suiting the action to the word, and escorting Miss Julia Briggs to the cabin, with as much ease, as if he had finished the story. What an extraordinary circumstance! Apostrophe apostrophe ejaculated the same old gentleman, preserving his listening attitude. What a traveler! Apostrophe apostrophe said the young ladies. What a singular name! Apostrophe apostrophe exclaimed the gentleman, rather confused by the coolness of the whole affair. I wish he had finished the story, apostrophe said an old lady. I wonder what a gum-gum really is? Apostrophe apostrophe, by Jove! Apostrophe apostrophe exclaimed Hardy, who until now had been lost in utter amazement. I don't know what it may be in India, but in England I think a gum-gum has very much the same meaning as a humbug. Apostrophe, how illiberal, how envious! Apostrophe cried everybody, as they made for the cabin, fully impressed with a belief in the captain's amazing adventures. Helves was the sole lion for the remainder of the day impudence, and the marvelous are pretty sure passports to any society. The party had by this time reached their destination, and put about on their return home. The wind, which had been with them the whole day, was now directly in their teeth. The weather had become gradually more and more overcast, and the sky, water, and shore were all of that dull, heavy, uniform lead color, which house painters daub in the first instance over a street door which is gradually approaching a state of convalescence. It had been spitting with rain for the last half hour, and now began to pour in good earnest. The wind was freshening very fast, and the waterman at the wheel had unequivocally expressed his opinion that there would shortly be a squall. A slight emotion on the part of the vessel, now and then, seemed to suggest the possibility of its pitching to a very uncomfortable extent in the event of its blowing harder, and every timber began to creak, as if the boat were an overladen clothes-basket. Seasickness, however, is like a belief in ghosts. Everyone entertained some misgivings on the subject, but few will acknowledge any. The majority of the company, therefore, endeavored to look peculiarly happy, feeling all the while especially miserable. Don't it rain? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired the old gentleman before noticed, when, by dint of squeezing and jamming, they were all seated at table. I think it does a little, apostrophe replied Mr. Percy Noakes, who could hardly hear himself speak, in consequence of the pattering on the deck. Don't it blow? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired someone else. No, I don't think it does, apostrophe responded Hardy, sincerely wishing that he could persuade himself that it did not, for he sat near the door, and was almost blown off his seat. It'll soon clear up, apostrophe said Mr. Percy Noakes, in a cheerful tone. Oh, certainly. Apostrophe apostrophe ejaculated the committee generally. No doubt of it. Apostrophe apostrophe said the remainder of the company, whose attention was now pretty well engrossed by the serious business of eating, carving, taking wine, and so forth. The throbbing motion of the engine was but too perceptible. There was a large, substantial, cold-boiled leg of mutton at the bottom of the table, shaking like blancmange. A previously hearty sirloin of beef looked as if it had been suddenly seized with the palsy, and some tongues, which were placed on dishes rather too large for them, went through the most surprising evolutions, darting from side to side, and from end to end, like a fly in an inverted wine glass. Then, the sweets shook and trembled, till it was quite impossible to help them, and people gave up the attempt in despair, and the pigeon pies looked as if the birds, whose legs were stuck outside, were trying to get them in. The table vibrated and started like a feverish pulse, and the very legs were convulsed. Everything was shaking and jarring. The beams in the roof of the cabin seemed as if they were put there for the sole purpose of giving people headaches, and several elderly gentlemen became ill-tempered in consequence. As fast as the steward put the fire irons up, they would fall down again, and the more the ladies and gentlemen tried to sit comfortably on their seats, the more the seats seemed to slide away from the ladies and gentlemen. Several ominous demands were made for small glasses of brandy. The countenances of the company gradually underwent most extraordinary changes. One gentleman was observed suddenly to rush from table without the slightest ostensible reason, and dart up the steps with incredible swiftness, thereby greatly damaging both himself and the steward, who happened to be coming down at the same moment. The cloth was removed, the dessert was laid on the table, and the glasses were filled. The motion of the boat increased. Several members of the party began to feel rather vague and misty, and looked as if they had only just got up. The young gentleman with the spectacles, who had been in a fluctuating state for some time, at one moment bright, and at another dismal, like a revolving light on the sea coast, rashly announced his wish to propose a toast. After several ineffectual attempts to preserve his perpendicular, the young gentleman, having managed to hook himself to the center leg of the table with his left hand, proceeded as follows. Ladies and gentlemen, a gentleman is among us, I may say a stranger. Here some painful thought seemed to strike the orator. He paused, and looked extremely odd. Whose talents, whose travels, whose cheerfulness? I beg your pardon, Edkins, hastily interrupted Mr. Percy Noakes. Hardy, what's the matter? Nothing, replied the funny gentleman, who had just life enough. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.